Welcome to For the Love of Dogs with Dennis Wolf. And welcome to For the Love of Dogs with Janice Wolf. So today we're going to be talking about dog behavior and how dog behavior and training is different. Well, you know, a lot of people get somebody local in the local box store, or you get somebody local who just, you know, does basic obedience training. And that's always a good thing for dogs, because what you do is you enable the dog to, you know, kind of have a good baseline. It's good. You can bond. The problem with that, though, is when you have a dog who maybe gets too food motivated, or perhaps a dog who has behavioral issues relating to food, they can become almost triggered by the very treat you're trying to give them. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that today. How can you take your dog who maybe is too food motivated, he's counter surfing, he's trying to steal stuff out of your pockets, he's taking stuff. I just had some lady had a beautiful Sherpa coat, like a $1,200 coat. The dog ate because she had all the treats in her pockets, and that the dog ate the pockets all the way through, from the outside of the jacket to the inside of the jacket and the pockets. Sometimes you can, there is such thing as being too food motivated. The other problem with that, what do you do when your dog is doing it just for the reward instead of doing it for the love of you? Instead of the love of dogs, the love of humans, the love of the owner. So what we want to do is start thinking about how we can teach the dog, instead of you becoming a human Pez dispenser, like I always say, how about if you just become the dog's best friend? How about if you build up a relationship with your dog so that your dog isn't always looking to see what he can get from you, but rather what he can do for you? And that's where you get, people say, drive, the interest in what it is that you want the dog to do. But I think also sometimes people are very unrealistic. Now, let's start with a puppy, okay? I've got my little puppy who is now 11 weeks old, little Ridgeback. She's a cutie. And she is a handful. So when you're talking about having a puppy or a dog who's maybe a little bit, a little bit of a handful, she has a little too much energy, how do you kind of change that? How do you temper that? Well, one thing you want to do is start building more of a relationship with the puppy or the dog through doing things together. So, for instance, if you want the dog, and I'm not talking about basic housebreaking, because obviously basic housebreaking, when the puppy or the dog goes to the bathroom outside, you do want to praise them. If you're going to give them a treat, don't wait till you go back in the house and the dog is sitting there barking at you for its treat. If you're going to do something and you're going to be rewarding the dog for that particular behavior or for that particular trick that you taught it, then you want to reward it right away. Dogs will forget after about 3 to 5 seconds, kind of like husbands with our anniversaries, ladies, right? They kind of forget. It's not that they don't remember that they have an anniversary. They just, it wasn't that important to them for that day. Not, they may love you dearly, but let's face it, sometimes they forget. Well, that's kind of what happens with dogs. They get a little bit sidetracked. And instead of just going to a higher value reward and a higher value reward, how about not starting out with a treat at all? How about starting out with time spent together, quality time? How about teaching your dog instead of training your dog, so that your dog starts learning not, hey, I can get this from you, but, hey, I want to spend time with you. So I just had a lovely lady who we have the board and train facility now, gorgeous mansion, about 13,000 square feet here in New Jersey. And the dog, they said, beautiful, beautiful, well-bred lab, gorgeous dog. Couldn't wait to get him here. And he's here, and she said, well, if you're not using treats, because I said, don't worry about treats. We give them cookies and fun things just because we love them, but I don't make them do anything for treats. And she said, well, but how do you get a stay with me or a place or a, whatever? How do you teach the dog or train the dog to come when you want him to come. I said, well, all I know is when I was a little kid, I loved my dad so much. My dad, all he had to do was walk towards the front door, and I'd be like, Daddy, can I go with you? He didn't buy me anything. Sometimes he did, but that wasn't why I went. I went because I wanted to be with him, and I didn't care what I had to give up to be with him. So I took Whispity Bunny Dog out with me on this five-acre property, and we had a beautiful little walk. I just walked. I didn't, you know, do anything unusual. I didn't tell her to come. I didn't tell her to follow. I didn't say cookie, 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 biscuit, 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 treat, 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 because that's not what she wanted. She wanted to spend time with me. And that's what we have to look at instead of constantly focusing ourselves on what the dog is going to be receiving for a reward. How about you are the reward? How about that? You become your dog's reward. Time spent with you, snuggling on the couch. Time spent with you walking on a trail or on a path. Time with you scratching the dog's ears or giving him a little massage. Even if you're not good at it with people, dogs don't care. They're so, so accepting, so grateful for whatever we do for them. So instead of obedience through obesity, where you're just shoveling food into your dog's mouth like Honey Boo Boo, a little fat, you know, pudgy little thing that is just doing things to see what they can get, you know, you're basically going out and just giving your dog great time spent with you. Now think back to when you guys were kids, okay? Think about the best times of your life. A lot of people will say, oh, we drove to Disneyland or Disney World, or, you know, we went to the special place that we really love. Things like that. Now, yes, you had fun, but you would have probably had that much fun no matter what would have happened because you were spending time with the people you loved. And that's what we have to remember. When you guys are out there and just treat, 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 cookie, 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 you know, biscuit, 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 and some people yelling at their dog, sit, you yell at them, Fluffy, down, Fluffy, no, Fluffy, sit, Fluffy, come. And what you're doing is you're alienating your dog, and you're actually damaging the relationship with that dog. You're damaging the trust, and you're damaging the respect without ever realizing it. And I know most of you are shaking your head saying, well, wait a minute, if I do that, but the dog listens to me. Well, sure. Kids who, you know, I don't want to say abused, but kids who have very, very strict parents, they listen to them. But when those kids grow up, you'll very often hear them say, I wish I had had a better relationship with my, you know, father or my mother or, you know, my, you know, sibling or a relative who was very tough with them. It's not that it's a bad thing, but if you don't have that really high quality relationship with that person or with your dog, with your pet, what's in it for the dog? So, yes, I've seen dogs who are abused that I go and grab out of a shelter or off the streets, and those dogs are just so grateful to have people around. But most of them come to you with their heads down. They look like, oh, no, what did I do wrong? And it takes a really long time to fix that. Some of you might be saying, well, no, I don't do that, but my husband does, or I don't do that, but my wife does, or I don't do that, but my 17-year-old boy really doesn't want the dog. He does that. Well, if you're protecting someone, if you're truly taking care of your dog and your dog is the one who is receiving that gift of your time, you owe that dog, you owe that child, you owe that pet the best you can be. So when you come home from work and you're really upset and the dog comes up to you and jumps and you hit him or yell at him or kick him, what, are you mad at the dog for jumping or did you just have a really rotten day? And if you had a really rotten day, you know, before you go home, go take yourself, you know, a half a Xanax or, you know, have a glass of tea or something, cup of tea on the way home. Do something so that you don't go home and take your day, your horrible day you just had of frustration and hating your job out on your dog. So dogs are amazingly resilient. It's why they're alive and why a dog can be in a family for 5 years and then be in a shelter for a year and then go to another family for a year or 6 months and go back and forth. And yes, they do eventually very often kind of have behavioral issues. But if you think about doing that to a person, you'd have somebody in prison, somebody murdering, somebody sex offender, things like that, because it's really hard on your personality. And because of that, you know, you have to really think about what it would be, you know, and how you're able to change that and make your life easier, make your dog's life easier. So when you come home and your dog jumps, that's not the right time to correct the jumping, is it? Because it's already happening. You're not in a great frame of mind. So why are you going to correct the dog? You know you're going to do it wrong. You're 100% going to do it wrong. So wouldn't it make more sense to, like on your day off, let's say on a Saturday or Sunday when you might have the day off, go outside, wait for a half hour, come back in and pretend that you just got back from work, but you're relaxed. So now you can correct the dog gently. You can teach him. And you want to do everything three times. I call it my rule of threes. So Janice's rule of threes is when you do any kind of behavioral modification, you want to do it minimum of three times. The reason we do everything in threes, if you get through the third day of a diet, when you wake up that fourth day, you have an immensely and infinitely higher chance of actually making it through your diet. But the first day and the second day and even into the third day before you're finished with that third day, you still have a very, very low chance of success comparatively with the day when you wake up on the fourth day after three good days. The other thing we do, as we do with diets, people have an all or nothing attitude. It drives me absolutely bonkers. So let's say your dog normally jumps and bites you when you walk in and nips you and everything. Well, this day, he jumps only once and he just mouths you a little bit. Don't correct him the same as you would if he grabbed you by the arm and dragged you onto the ground and jumped all over your back while you were down. See, you have to do things in levels. You have to be appropriate. And when you do something, I call it my 1% rule, you only want to correct your dog 1% more than the dog actually did the offense. It's kind of like, imagine you go into a store and you steal a lipstick, okay? And you go to prison for 30 years for stealing a lipstick. Or you steal a police car and you roll through a crowd of people and you kill people and you get 30 years. What, you wouldn't get that same punishment for stealing lipstick or stealing a vehicle and having vehicular homicide, right? But why do we do that with dogs? The dog jumps or the dog barks or the dog pees on the floor. The dog does something wrong and we lose our minds, or the other word that I wanted to say. We lose our minds completely. We're screaming at this dog. We love the dog, but we're frustrated with ourselves because maybe you came home and you didn't let the dog out. Maybe the dog jumped because he was just so happy to see you. He was excited. Maybe you walked in and you were so stressed that the dog, that energy that you walked in with, keyed the dog off. Maybe you just need to get a good behaviorist. All right? So that brings me back to, what is the difference between an obedience trainer and a behaviorist? Now, you got to be careful, because I have seen in the last probably 5 years, everybody is all of a sudden a behaviorist. They're not just dog trainers. Now they think they're doing behavior. Changing a dog's behavior is like being a psychiatrist or psychologist. Changing a dog's body position, which is obedience, which is also a great thing if you need to, you know, if you have a good dog to start with, that's kind of like coaching somebody to become a skater or to play football. So some things do require, like skating and football, do require your brain. You have to be pretty smart. You have to have great reflexes. But training your body to do something is obedience. Training the dog to sit, training it to lie down, training it to give a paw, training it to sit up, training it to fetch. Those things are, they're not things that are behaviors, even though they, you would think they are. They're tasks. So that's like telling someone, if you go and go to the store for me, I'm going to give you $100. Well, if you don't go to the store, you don't get the $100. So you can understand it in that way. A behavior is when you're driving your car and you're on your way to make the $100 for going to the supermarket for somebody who wants to pay $100, which is a pretty good deal for you, right? If you're going there and somebody is, let's say, in your way, and you're courteous to that person, you let them go, and then you proceed along, it's, you'd say, well, yeah, but that's what we're supposed to do. Right, that's behavior. Behavior is the way you behave. It's the way you comport yourself. It's the way you act towards others, where obedience is the tricks you do. It's the tasks you have to do. So if I say, here, I'm going to give you $100 to go to the supermarket, you go to the supermarket, you come back, you get the $100. But how about if I just said to you, hey, you know, I don't feel well, and you say to me, hey, Janice, let me go to the supermarket for you and pick up a few items for you. And I say, oh, my God, thank you so much. That's so nice and kind of you. You go. You come back, and I say, gee, let me buy you a tank of gas. That was so nice of you. You see what the difference is? The difference is, the first way, you're only doing it for the reward. You wouldn't do it otherwise. You're only doing it to see what you can get. And you may be a nice person, but you're doing it for the $100. The second way, you're doing something. It's your behavior. It's your kindness. It's your strength of character, that your integrity. And all we're doing after you come back, because you did it from your heart, is saying, hey, wow, I really appreciate it. Here's the money, or here's the tank of gas that costs $100. So I think what the goal is when you, and you can go on wyattslist.com, wyattslist.com, and you'll see all the questions we have. When you join on that, it's very cool. You can get actual answers from people ranging from my good friend Temple Grandin to me to top veterinarians and top behavioral people that think the right way, that behavior is behavior and it's different from, you know, throwing treats and cookies and things, you know, at dogs. And it doesn't mean that you can't give your dog treats. It doesn't mean you shouldn't give your dog treats. And it doesn't mean you shouldn't do obedience. Two of my very closest friends are three are big people. One does trains all the movie and TV dogs. Another one trains his little Yorkies and Chihuahuas to play card games and basketball games, and he goes all over the world. He's a sweetheart, and his dogs are great. But you know what? Sometimes people's dogs are also not well-behaved. And then the other one, as a friend of mine who won the National Masters Obedience Championships and just won at Westminster. I mean, she's phenomenal. But, you know, some of these people that you see that are great at a skill or great at obedience or whatever have dogs that can't be with other dogs, have dogs that are barking or growling or snarling or, you know, are aggressive. So obedience is great when you have a dog who's super well-behaved or even who's moderately well-behaved. When you have a dog who has a behavioral issue, though, and something like, for instance, the dog is let's say, you know, urinating in the house. Well, if the dog is urinating in the house and it's marking territory, then that's a behavior. If it's urinating in the house because it's 3 months old and you're leaving the dog for 6 hours, you have to remember a puppy can only hold his urine for approximately 1 hour for every month old he is. So if you have a three-month-old puppy, he can hold it about 3 hours, maybe a little more, maybe a little less, but that's a good rule of thumb. So would you punish the dog who's urinating in the house because he's a dominant, let's say a pit bull or a, you know, we always give them a bad rap, but, you know, it's more of a dominant dog, most people know, a German Shepherd, whatever. Doesn't mean that every one of them is bad. It doesn't mean that many of them are bad, but it does mean when you have a dog who's of a dominant, I did not say aggressive, a dominant breed dog, if that dog is marking territory versus, you know, a little golden retriever puppy who's, you know, 3 months old and he just can't hold it, do you think you should be treating both of those the same? No, because one is doing it to spite you, to say like, hey, I'm marking my territory because I own everything, even if he's a great dog. The other one is saying, I can't hold it anymore, mommy. Like you see these cute TV commercials. Mom, I think we're going to have a situation because the little boy can't get his belt off in time to go to the bathroom. So you really have to look at the dog's behavior. Look at why the dog is doing that. Look at what's causing the dog to do it. And try to imagine if that were you. Think about how we communicate with dogs. We yell English or Spanish or Portuguese or French or whatever language we yell at dogs. We yell at them. So I always learned and I always believe that if you have to yell and raise your voice when you're talking to somebody, it probably means you didn't have anything intelligent to say or you didn't have a good comeback. Because if you did have a comeback, you wouldn't have to yell. People yell and raise their voices when they're frustrated, when they feel like they don't have anything else, or when they feel like the other person's when they feel the other person's opinion isn't important. So I don't think any of those is really a valid reason for yelling. Parents yelling at children, how could you fail a test? Does that make it better? So the kid doesn't fail. If you yell loud enough, he gets an A. Is that how it works? You know what? I had all straight A's and never studied a day in my life. I never had to study. I was very lucky because I have an eidetic memory and audiographic memory. So if I hear something or see something, I can remember it. I don't know. It's just I'm very, very blessed that I have that. And a lot of people have things like that where you have a gift in one area. But why would you yell at a child who's trying hard but isn't getting the A's? So maybe the child is trying this, is her hardest or his hardest, but he's getting his C's. Well, you can tutor, you can help, but if that child is doing a good job and is trying really hard, you can't yell at somebody for not having the ability to do what you want them to do or what they want to do. Same thing with dogs. I always tell kids, especially kids when I was teaching for ESL and all the things I've done through my life. And I always would tell the kids, if you don't understand when I teach you something and you don't tell me you didn't understand, then you're not helping me to be a better teacher. I want you to make me a better teacher. I want to be the best teacher in the world. The only way I can do that is if you tell me when I'm not being clear, not when you don't understand it and blaming it on the child. I tell the kids, if you feel that you didn't understand what I was saying, that means that I didn't do a good enough job as your teacher. You should think the same way about working with your dog. If your dog doesn't understand, then you were not an effective communicator. You did not teach the dog in a way it understood. And as a teacher of whatever you're teaching, whether you're teaching children or elderly or dogs or special needs people, you have to be a very good communicator. And if you're not a good communicator, that's where we end up with problems. We end up with problems not because the dog, is stupid, not because the dog didn't want to understand, but because you were not an effective communicator. And I think therein lies the problem. So how do we effectively communicate with our dogs? Well, you know what? We're going to talk about that in a very little time because we're going to go for a quick break, and then we're going to talk about how you can communicate well with your dog in the second half of today's show, which is the shelter dog, the service dog portion. We're going to talk about how we train service dogs and other dogs to be well-rounded, well-behaved, and really awesome companions. We'll be right back. Don't go away. And welcome back to From Shelter Dog to Service Dog with Janice Wolf. So we're talking about communication and the difference between obedience and behavior. Now, one thing I don't want anyone to do is think that one is going to fix everything versus the other. But what I will say is if you want to teach your dog tricks, if you want to teach your dog things that could help, like when you're training a service dog and you want to train that dog to do something, sometimes, and we don't use any treats, we don't use obedience, we use behavior to do the rehabilitation and the training, but it's a very different setup. But it's also tricky, and you really have to understand dogs on a very deep level. And the average person probably isn't going to be able to do the things and certainly the level of what we do at Merlin's Kids. So what I want you to think about is try to think things out logically, almost like a playbook like you'd have in a sport. You know how we watch and we say, look at that Hail Mary pass. Wow, it's a miracle. Look how incredible. They won the playoffs or they won the Super Bowl. This was a great year this year because that was pretty much what happened. But do you think that Hail Mary pass right over the goal line, don't you think that has been practiced hundreds of times before? It may never be used, but it's practiced over and over and over again. It wasn't luck. And that's one thing that you'll see. When you start working, people will be like an obedience trainer because, you know, they read some books or they take an online class and, you know, they say, oh, I'm an obedience trainer. But training or behavior, but especially training a dog, you don't do the same exact thing with every single dog. You know, it's like special needs kids. We have a phrase we always say, if you know one child with special needs, you know one child with special needs. If you know one autistic child, you know one autistic child. Knowing somebody with a disability doesn't mean you know what everybody thinks. It's just what that one person thinks. Same thing with dogs. You'll have a dog who's, let's say, a golden puppy who's super exuberant and super sweet, and he has a very little attention span because he's a puppy and he's a knucklehead. So you have that, but then... You know, you have you'll have somebody who maybe has, let's say, a poodle mix and the dog is fear aggressive. I have several of them here. I have two fear aggressive dogs right now that I'm working with for our board and train in New Jersey here, which if anybody needs help, you can reach out to us at 855-449-9288. So 855-449-9288. We'll be happy to help you. So I have two of them of the six dogs that are here. And both of the dogs, they're both poodle mixes, both probably $4,000 or $5,000 for a mix of two breeds that whatever, we'll stay out of that. But what's interesting is how many of these mixes I see that are not purebred poodle, but, you know, kind of these mixes of mixes who have the very similar behavioral issues. So if you have a golden puppy that's really well-bred from an AKC show breeder of merit, chances are you're not going to have one who's going to be fear-aggressive or fearful or aggressive because that breeder spends 20 or 30 years breeding and perfecting those lines, not only winning at dog shows, but, you know, people say, oh, I don't care if it's a show dog line. You do. Because when you go into a dog show, if your dog is not 100% sound, if your dog is limping, you're kicked out. If your dog looks fearful or growls, you're kicked out. If your dog snaps at a judge or at another competitor or lunges or is unruly in the ring, you're out. You're done. Who's going to want to breed their grand champion show dog to your ill-behaved dog? Nobody. So we as reliable, responsible, reputable breeders will not breed to something that is not perfect in every way because why would you want to bring that into your line? But when you're breeding these mixes, and it's not just the poodle mixes because I love standard poodles. We have quite a few standard poodles actually at Merlin's Kids that we've trained. And we have one right now is going to be a diabetic alert dog. We have another one that was trained for a little girl with cancer.
my little sweetheart who is in heaven now. And we have trained, you know, dogs for seizures and all kinds of, and multiple disabilities. But when you mix things, it's kind of like, you know, a man and a woman getting married and saying, oh, I hope that the baby has your beautiful blue eyes, honey. And then your spouse says, I hope our baby has your gorgeous blonde hair and your height. And then you say, well, I hope that the baby gets my legs and your cute nose. But guess what happens? You might have that happen, but chances are it doesn't. You might have the child getting the brown hair that you didn't want it to have, the brown eyes you didn't want it to have, the crooked teeth you didn't want it to have. And it may be, the baby may be, you know, wind up being short and maybe have bad skin or whatever you didn't want it to have. Because genetics, you can't predict genetics the way you want it to be. Genetics happens. It's basically throwing 4 plus 4, throw 8 different traits in there that you have from your parents and grandparents, taking those traits and saying, okay, I have a blue eyes. And of course, there's a thing called Punnett square, Mendelian genetics, where if 2 blue-eyed people, they can only produce a blue-eyed child. Could have green eyes, not hazel, but green, if one of them has the allele for that. But not to get too much into science right now, but most of the things, you'd be surprised. I mean, I used to have my Merlin, who was Merlin's kids, my gorgeous Lipizzan stallion, and I would have mares. I had 1 year about 30 different people who owned mares, the female horses, who all wanted to breed to Merlin. And I'd look at pictures and videos. I picked, maybe 8 or 10, because a lot of those mares shouldn't have been bred. And I remember what the one particular guy, I had him ride Merlin, even though he didn't know how to ride. Merlin took really good care of him. And I remember saying to him, what are you trying to get out of this cross? He said, I basically want to have your horse and everything about him, but I just want my mare to produce it because I love your stallion. And I said, what do you hate most about your mare? He said, oh, I hate her neck. I hate her nose. She's got a Roman nose. She has no mane. She has big feet. She has a really long back. And I really, you know, your horse is gorgeous. I love Merlin. He's a magnificent horse. And, you know, that's what I want. And I said, can you live with the things you just read me off your list if that's what you get? He said, but no, I know your horse, your stallion's going to improve my mare. I said, yes, this is true, but I don't know how much, because your mare isn't a Lipizzan. Your mare is a quarter horse. It was a quarter horse thoroughbred mix, call it appendix. And I said, you've already got quarter horse traits. You've got thoroughbred traits, which you can have some funky things on both. So how about if everything you read off your list that you didn't want, you get, would you be happy? He said, no. And I said, and that's why I'm not breeding to your mare. I said, go get yourself a nice mare, maybe lease a mare from somebody you love. You know, the mare, you know, love the mare, you think she's beautiful, and you can live with the worst that she's got, then come back to me. And actually the next year, he found a very close friend of his who had a gorgeous, gorgeous mare. It was an Arabian mix, beautiful mare. Very, very pretty, beautiful conformation. Both of the parents had nice conformation as well. And we did breed Merlin to that mare, and we got a gorgeous, gorgeous foal. But most people would have just bred and said, oh, I'll take whatever money because I'm getting paid for the stud fee. So thinking about that, you want to always breed to better your breed. You want to breed not to make money, like most of these people who are breeding these designer disaster dogs. And you can actually get them, you know, these dogs, you can go to a rescue or shelter. You'll get, if you want a poodle mix, there's gazillions of them because people buy them. They're not what they thought. People buy, especially the Bernese Mountain Dog that they mix now with a poodle. And the one lady got one and she thought it was going to be little. And one of my assistants, when the woman said, this dog is over 100 pounds already, he's 10 months old. And he said to the woman, didn't you know what you were buying? Like, didn't you ever see what a Bernese Mountain Dog looks like? They're big. She said, I know, but I thought that the poodle part would take over. She bred to a toy poodle. So this was a maybe 8-pound poodle was the father, and a 90-pound Bernese Mountain Dog was the mother, and the baby was over 100 pounds. Because you don't know where the DNA comes from. You don't know what it is. That's why when you go to a reputable AKC show breeder of merit, and you get somebody who is dedicating his or her life to making sure that you get what you wanted. So you want a Rhodesian Ridgeback. If you go to a pet store and you get one, I pretty much guarantee you're not even going to know if you even have a purebred one. Just because they have a ridge, I've seen a lot of mixed Ridgebacks that have ridges, and I've seen a lot of purebred Ridgebacks from breeders who don't know what they're doing, who have, you know, 10 ridgeless puppies in a litter or 8 ridgeless puppies. It's genetic. It happens. So you really have to be careful. And also not, I think most people don't realize where a lot of these dogs come from. So even though you got the puppy out of that puppy mill, the mother and the father are still in that puppy mill, and they will keep breeding those, the female and male, breed them over and over and over and over until the female can no longer produce puppies or till she dies. That's what they do. So if you want to perpetuate that, go ahead. Let's get back to obedience and behavior. So how do you build a relationship? So let's say you're teaching your puppy to sit and lie down. Is that a bad thing? Well, no, because it's fun and it's good for the puppy to look up at you. But what always got me is when people, especially the people who are constantly training obedience, you know, on a really low level, they're looking, look at me, look at me, look at me, look at me. I would never say that, because I would say, don't look at my wrinkles. Don't look at the mascara that's under my eye. Don't look at my eyelash that fell and now my one eye is red. Don't look at me. I don't want you to look at me. I want you to pay attention to me. And this is something with special needs children, you hear a phrase, is the child attending to you? So the dog doesn't have to look at you to know where you are. I don't need my dog to stare at me focusing, waiting to see when a cookie is going to fall out of my hand. I want the dog to want to be with me. That behavior is changing the way the dog is thinking. So that the dog wants to please you, that the dog wants to be with you, and he wants to see what you'd like him to do. So when I walk around the 5 acres here, and I've got a half a dozen dogs walking around with no leash, and people can't believe it, why not? If I were walking with 5 of my little children, my children would follow me because they don't know where I'm going, so they want to stay with me because I'm providing for their needs. I'm protecting them. That's relationship-based behavior versus obedience, which is fun. There's nothing wrong with it. And some people are doing, like my friend, super competitive obedience, and it's really cool. But it's not going to change a dog's behavior. Each of those people that I told you, and I know these people, they're phenomenal. They're top, top, top in their field. Each of those people has had dogs with behavioral issues still, as much as they train and do with their dogs. Because making a dog do something and being able to read the dog in an obedience kind of venue versus having the dog want to do it is a very different thing. There's definitely some crossover. But what I want you to think about is if you're training a dog, that means that the dog has to wait for a command, right? That's like if I have a text message and you say, text me when you're finished. Well, I know that if I'm not finished, I'm not texting you. But how about if I forget to text you even though I was finished? Because I didn't think about that because it wasn't on my mind. But how about if I'm in love with you? I'm so in love with you. I'm going to be thinking of you so that when I'm finished, I'm going to think, oh, I wonder if, you know, he's okay, or I wonder if she's okay. I wonder if my dog is okay, because you're thinking of them naturally. And that's really a big difference between obedience and behavior. So what does it take to do behavior for dogs or for horses, which I do? Well, for horses, you really, I mean, that's not for somebody who's well, there are very few charlatans in the horse business other than horse traders and dealers. But basically, you can fake whatever you want, but you go with, you know, have somebody who's got, like I have, a number of stallions. If you don't know what you're doing, you're dead. You're kicked in the head. You're dumped. You know, you're hurt. But with dogs, if you don't know what you're doing, you just say, you know, whatever you want to say to get people to follow you. And it's kind of, you know, a sad thing. The way I look at it is, you know, think about what makes sense to you. Right. If somebody says to you, well, you have to use this shock collar on your dog or he's not going to respect you. Well, if your parents were constantly zapping you with the shock collar, and yes, you can call it an electronic training collar, unless it's the one that only has the sound beeps, which still it's too close and a lot of dogs freak out because they can't get away from the sound. You know, if you're shocking your dog and you say, oh, it's a vibration, it's a shock. I just had an EEG a couple weeks ago. Let me tell you something. It's like a darn taser. It hurts. Put it on your own neck and crank it up and zap yourself. You're going to flip through the ceiling. So don't think of punishing the dog. Think of kind of preempting the dog. Think about what would I have to do to get this end result. What do I have to do to get the football over the goal line when we only have 16 seconds? Well, what do I have to do? Well, I have to probably throw a long pass. Okay, so if I'm going to throw a long pass, I need somebody to protect me and I need a wide receiver to get down there. So guess what? I might want to throw the ball a little bit higher to give my guys time. See, it's a concept. So that once you start that concept, then the person or the dog can follow through with it. It's kind of like all being on the same page. And I think that very often we just do what we do because we just do it, even though it's not going to be helpful, it's not going to be productive, but it's our go-to. So, you know, it's kind of like your favorite little black dress, except you didn't know it was a beach party. So now you're in a heavy wool little black dress at a beach party. You got to know where you're going. You have to understand the way the dog is thinking, and how you have to think and what you have to do in order for that dog to understand what you want him to do. So, for instance, let's say you wanted to train the dog what we call a safe spot, which means the dog is laying down and it's going to stay there for a while until somebody, the same person who put the dog into the safe spot, is going to take the dog out. So let's say an autistic child is tethered to that dog, and the mom has to go run and get her 3-year-old while her 6-year-old with autism is having a meltdown at the zoo. So the mom can actually give the dog a very soft command. It's not an obedience command. It's just a little hand signal. And that dog will stay with that other child so that the mom can tend or dad can tend to that other child who might be running off. So let's say for safe spot, you can make your dog sit and lay down all you want and tell him stay, 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 stay. The second you're out of earshot, the dog is going to go, oh, you're not telling me to stay anymore. What we do is we do everything behaviorally, which is so much easier when you know what to do because it takes less time. Now, initially, does it take a little more time? Probably. But in the long run, it becomes a patterned behavior instead of being an obedience command. So think about right now, if I told you for the next 10 minutes, I want you to just stand up tall, about 6 inches from the wall, and you're not allowed to sit down. So you're standing up tall, and 3 or 4 minutes passes, and you shift your weight to your other leg. And another minute, you shift your weight to your other leg. Eventually, you know what you're going to do? You're going to lean on the wall because I told you not to sit. But I didn't tell you to lean on the wall. I'm just telling you what you can't do. So now you figure out, oh, I'll lean on the wall, and that's better. So it's kind of that same thing. You walk in somewhere, you stop, you stand, you wait, and it might be a minute, it might be 5 minutes, it might be an hour, but you're going to wait. And as soon as that dog sits or lays down or whatever you were waiting, not telling him, but waiting for him to do, when he figured it out, you reach down and give him a good pet. Now the dog says, wait a minute, what did I do? He may even get up and stand up. What did I do that made mom so happy? Huh, I don't know, we're just standing around. Man, I'm getting tired. I'm going to just lie down again. Wait, mom just petted me again. So wait, let me try this again. Let me stand here. Oh, we're not moving. Let me just lay down, see if this is it. Mom's petting me. Guess what? Mom wants me to lay down when we stop and we're standing for a minute. I'm just going to do that. Because every time I stop and lay down when I'm supposed to, right, mom pets me. And I want mom to pet me and I want mom to be proud of me. That's how easy it is. But it's not the same thing. It's like E.E. Cummings wrote, you can't step into the same river twice, right? You can't step into the same river twice. It's not the same water. It's not the same leaves. It's not the same season. You're not the same you. You're older. You're wiser. You're grayer. You got more wrinkles. You can't recreate a moment. And that's what's so hard even about scientific experiments. You have to do them at the same altitude with the same equipment. You know, otherwise you change the stove, you use an electric instead of a gas, or you use something else instead of what the original person used, and then you go, oh, that's not what happens. You have to use the exact same, having control, a control group. It has to be the same control. So let's say you take that golden retriever puppy, and he takes an hour to get the concept of laying down calmly next to you when you stop. Well, maybe you take a fearful doodle, and that dog lies down quicker, but every time something moves, he jumps up. Or another dog comes near, he growls. Or somebody's got a piece of food and he tries to bite. You can have that same dog do the same thing, but he wasn't a good candidate in the first place. Those dogs do better when you're kind of not giving them a job, when you start teaching them not to be reactive because you are taking care of them. That's a whole other thing. If anybody wants to learn about that, you want to get a copy of my book called Shh Happens, S-H-H-H, Happens, Dog Behavior 101, which you can get on Amazon. So it's Shh Happens, S-H-H-H, Happens, Dog Behavior 101 by Janice Wolf, and you can get that on Amazon. It's going to teach you a lot of these things, not about service dogs, but about behavior in general and about how to teach your dog, not train your dog, but teach your dog to be the best dog in the world. It goes into a lot of things, including genetics, because genetics matters. Some dogs, and like people, are just very, very nervous and anxious. So a lot of the poodle mixes, not the standard poodles, because we use standard poodles, but a lot of times on these poodle mixes, they're using toy poodles who don't have the same solid temperament very often that standard poodles do. So if you buy a dog and the person who bred the dog is just breeding every 6 months on every heat cycle, do you think that person cares? If you don't get that cute little fluffy puffy, somebody else is going to buy it. But what happens is you can't treat, and this is what happens with obedience sometimes and with people who call themselves behaviorists or call themselves service dog trainers, they don't know what they don't know. And that's a really common phrase I use a lot. They don't know what they don't know. They think, how hard can this be? Yeah, look at downhill skiers. Watch Michaela Schifrin. Watch Michelle Kwan. The skateboard guy, the snowboard. Sean White. Look at some of these people. You look and you go, wow, it looks really easy. Watch an Olympic jumper do a puissance course. You go, wow, look, the horse does it all by itself. You have no idea how hard it is. Trust me, it's really hard to do things and make them look easy. That's what the Olympics are all about. People from all over the world working so hard to try to make things look easy. And that's where you get a higher score. So when you have a dog and then somebody else has a dog, you might not be able to do the same things with that dog. And I don't mean just what you're training, but how you're training. You have to be adjustable and adaptable. So if you take a fearful or fear-aggressive, let's say, poodle mix, and you take a golden retriever and you take, let's say, a Rhodesian Ridgeback and let's say a German Shepherd. Each of them is different because of the breed or combination of breeds that it's mixed with, but also each individual within that breed is different. So if somebody says, oh, I've trained two service dogs, good for you. You know, my first 100 were throwaways, and that was, you know, all done for free. And I'm a behaviorist, and I assure you my first 100 throwaways were better than 99% of people's best dog they've ever created. But you learn and you learn and you learn and you learn. So every time you work with a dog and you get bitten, or every time you work with a dog and it doesn't work, and every time you work with a dog and it does work after it didn't initially, you learn more and you become a better trainer or better behaviorist for the next dog. And it literally takes, I think, 20 years easily, 15 to 20 years until you really know what you're doing. And then it takes another 15 or 20 years to perfect it. And then maybe it takes another 15 or 20 years to teach others how to do it. And then you get to retire. And unfortunately, that's what's going to happen right now because our time is passing. So a few things before I go. Go on to our website, www.wyattslist.com, W-Y-A-T-T-S-L-I-S-T.com. Sign up because you're going to get all the amazing information from top people, including myself and Temple Grandin and some wonderful veterinarians who are the top in their field. Also, if you need help with your dog, either a board and train type of a setting, or if you need me or one of our people around the country, please reach out to us at 855-449-9288. That's 855-449-9288. If you know someone who needs a service dog or needs their dog trained or evaluated and potentially trained to be a service dog, reach out to us. We're happy to help you. And I wish everybody an amazing, wonderful, great weekend. It's supposed to be beautiful weather here in the Northeast. And I hope everyone has a healthy and safe weekend. God bless.